and you're listening to LA Miracle Cure, and I'm your host, Barbara. And can you believe that we are on America Out Loud, and this is season two? Now, you know, prior to this, we have brought you all the professionals in the cannabis industry talking about the laws changing in California to legalize medicinal use of cannabis and also adult use. Now, it has passed 420, and believe it or not, businesses are open, they are licensed, and there are all these ancillary businesses that are surrounding the cannabis industry, because believe it or not, folks, it is happening, and it's going to be happening in a town near you. So now, one of the most important, if I may say, typecast I would like to add to this would be someone who would help you prepare your website, prepare your verbiage, prepare your online persona. And this would be a person that I had the privilege of meeting, and we have today in our spotlight. And her name is Julia Rubiner. And Julia, welcome to LA Miracle Cure.
Thank you so much for having me.
Why, of course. And I'm fascinated with her because she is an herbal verbalist. Do you get it? I love it. So, Julia, again, welcome. We're so glad you could make time for us. But tell us a little bit about herbal verbalism.
Yeah, I would be happy to. So I am Julia Rubiner, the herbal verbalist, and that means I am a cannabis copywriter. So what I do is write. I'm all about words. I'm all about verbiage. And what I like to write about are people in the cannabis industry, what they're doing, what their story is, and help them use their personal story to advance their business.
Wow, that's amazing. So are you saying that you would be a journalist? I mean, if someone wanted to do what you do, would they need to be a journalist or a blogger, or help us understand?
You know, that is such a good question, because most people have never heard the term copywriter, because it's really only used in the advertising business. So to clarify, I have worked as a journalist, but I am not now a journalist, and I have worked for a publishing company as the editor of a reference book, but I'm not doing that kind of writing now. And to tell you some more about what I am not, I'm not a screenwriter, and I'm not a fiction writer. So I'm going to very academically now read to you a definition of what a copywriter does, because I feel it's something I want people to know. So, and this is from Wikipedia, one of my favorite sites online.
All right.
Copywriting is the act of writing text for the purpose of advertising or other forms of marketing. The product, called copy, is written content that aims to increase brand awareness and ultimately persuade a person or group to take a particular action. So you can see why it's more commonly used in the advertising field than a lot of other business areas.
Wow, Julia. You know what? I am in school and I am pulling up a chair, folks. This is what we need to know. So from the advertising industry perspective, there has to be, it's just not hodgepodge. Hey, I've got cocoa butter over here, come buy it. Or hey, I've got a beautiful new makeup brand. It is a really concerted effort to put the right words together, to bring the right audience, to therefore affect business or to make money. So,
right, absolutely.
Give us a little bit. So, okay, let me just say right now in my purse, I have my thesaurus. So I'm going to need more than that.
Excellent.
To write copy, right?
The most important thing you need to write copy, I think, is an ability to really talk to whoever is the visionary behind the product or behind the service. So what I do is I dig down, I interview people just like you interview people, and I get to the bottom of their story and I find out, why are they doing this? What are they bringing to this? why have, especially in this field where right now it's difficult. There are a lot of rules and regulations. You need a lot of money. It's hard. So why are you getting yourself into this arena? Why are you doing this? And I find that once I talk to people about that, they pretty soon give me, and this is another advertising term, they pretty much give me what we call their unique selling proposition. So this is, Barbara, why should I come on your show and not on somebody else's show? Why should I go on your show and not on your competitor's show? It's the same thing if you have a dispensary. It's the same thing with me. Why should somebody come to me to write their story, to write their website, to write their bio, to write their newsletters and their emails and all of that instead of somebody else who does what I do? And the answer to that question is in someone's story. They usually don't even know it when we start talking, but as we talk, the story comes out. And that's where I get the idea for how to write copy to promote their business.
Well, now I will tell you, in a story, there are secrets.
That is true.
And it's, I mean, there, you know, there are some things that the general public doesn't need to engage in. So then you would do like, what would be the word to call when you would do like, not a cover up, but just a step over?
Well, you know, it's spin. Have you ever heard the term spin?
Isn't that funny? I was wanting you to say that word.
Yeah, it's spin. That's exactly what it is. You emphasize the positive, you de-emphasize the negative. You never have to lie about anything. It's never about that. It's really just about highlighting what you want people to know. And if there's something you don't want people to know, you don't need to say it. Or if you feel you have to say it, you de-emphasize it.
Wow. So we could really attribute a verbalist to some of the people who actually are really running our political awareness right now, would you say?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, and the thing is, my background is what my current work grew out of is I worked in the publicity department of a record company. So I learned spin from some masters because, you know, with the rock stars, there are some things that they want people to know and some things they don't want people to know.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. It's about, yeah, you've probably heard some of these terms because you hear it a lot in the media when you're talking about politics, but it's about crafting the narrative. Seizing the narrative. You tell the story before somebody else does.
Well, you know what? That is so timely that you would even bring that up. But, you know, when we talk a little bit more about this thing called cannabis that is out of the bag, it's out of the suitcase, and it's down the street from you. I mean, it's becoming very accessible.
Right.
So, one of the major things that I just know, just from prior experience, is that it's a new generation driving the businesses, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, it's all really, the power is not in Sacramento, where the government is. The power is with the Angelino. Now, can you tell me what is the definition of an Angelino? I need to know.
Well, technically speaking, an Angelino is somebody born and raised in Los Angeles, like my husband. He's a San Fernando Valleyite. I moved here in 1994. I'm from the suburbs of Detroit, and I do miss Michigan. I love Michigan, and my folks still live there. But I fell in love, and I moved to Los Angeles, and I never looked back. So I've now been here going on 25 years, actually going on 24, but let's round up. So I pretty much consider myself an Angelino at this point, though my mother-in-law, you know, who's 91 and came here when she was in her 20s, might say she's an Angelino. And then somebody else might say, well, no, you have to be born here. It doesn't matter how long you've lived here. So,
wow. Isn't that something? Well, you know, that's one of the reasons why we started this show was because we saw the passion and the vever of the Angelinos against all odds, pulling together, no matter what your bank account, no matter what your race, creed, religion, but pulling together to make sure that there was safe access of cannabis here in Los Angeles for the people who are suffering with health maladies such as cancer and AIDS. And well, let me just do this for my viewers. Just recently, I attended the Bureau of Cannabis Control Advisory Committee, where the board of cannabis cannabis advisory committee people who were politically selected, some of our representatives from Los Angeles. There were people there from Humboldt County. There were people there from Sacramento who knew nothing of cannabis but are in control of it in terms of laws and regulations. And then there were people from Compton. There were Weed for Warriors. I never will forget them. They showed up to testify. Yeah. There were AIDS patients that could barely get down the aisle that testified. There were all these people showing their remarkable connection to cannabis. And then, of course, there were those that were in it for the money, for the corporate aspect of being able to parlay this into a major, well, let's face it, they plan to make $15 billion this year alone in California here in cannabis in the industry. So now that we know that the laws are being made and they're kind of fluid because some laws don't support other laws and some laws are not egregious to good business. So tell me, when you write copy for a company, are you researching the laws to take those in account when you write, or is it that you write the copy and then later on, because the laws are fluid, you adjust to the laws? How does that work?
Well, I'm in a lucky situation because as an ancillary member of the cannabis community, of the business community, I am, as you know, one of the people who does not touch the plant. So it is the responsibility of the people who touch the plant to know what they can and cannot do. So I'm in a lucky spot there. However, I make it my business to know what the laws are. For instance, I've been speaking to some people who are so frustrated that they can't advertise on Facebook, for instance. They can't advertise in a lot of different settings. And some of it is really difficult, especially the fact that you can't do digital. Because in digital, there the laws about your audience for the kind of writing that I do say that you have to know that a certain percentage of your audience, let's say 71% of your audience who is going to absorb this copy that I'm writing, is over the age of 21. That's really what the law is. I may be wrong about the 71.25, but in a digital setting, you can tell that about your audience. You can really drill down into those numbers and you can tell exactly who your audience is and how old they are and how they got to you, et cetera. So in this particular area, it's very challenging for the people who touch the plant. They have to be up on these laws all the time. And I try to help with that. I'm not going to sell somebody a service that they're ultimately not going to be able to use. Mm-hmm. So, I have to be aware.
Right. But they have to have a website and they have to have a certain amount of a digital media such as Instagram. I mean, it's very interesting. They can't advertise on Facebook, but Instagram, I hate to say it, is out the window. I mean,
here's something interesting about Instagram. If you read Instagram small print, and it's been a while since I did, my understanding is that you cannot show anyone actually using cannabis. But you and I both know that any time at all that you spend on Instagram looking into cannabis topics, there's all kinds of people using cannabis on Instagram. And of course, Instagram is owned by Facebook.
Yes, it is. So. It is an anomaly. And it's very difficult to really figure this out because I know that children spend time, I mean, most of their time on Snapchat, Instagram. I mean, this is, they check in 9, 10, 15, 25 times a day. And this content is starting to be, it's overlapping. Let me ask you this. Okay, the other day, I was driving down a beautiful street on La Cienega, one of my favorite streets in LA. My sunroof was open. The day was beautiful. You know, LA, they say they have diamonds on the ground. Well, it was definitely glistening. And next to me pulled up an LA city bus. And guess what it had on it?
What?
It was covered with weed buds. The whole bus.
Oh,
first,
my
it was painted white. And then it had these little buds on it. And you could see no windows. And it was celebrating the week of 420. Now, without words, they were promoting, I guess, the Vice Channel or Viceland, which is a friend to our show. We've had several people on from Viceland. But here is something going down the street that is a city taxpayer-driven entity. What do you say to something like that when image outweighs words?
Well, we're such a visual society. I'm pretty much used to that. And you know, I've learned over the years to be very economical with my words. And one of the things I love doing most are taglines, which generally should not be more than seven words. And of course, you know, you have social media where you have 140 characters or fewer than that. But I think that when you get into a circumstance where you need to go beyond that sort of surface image and drill down into what you do, you need to educate people. You need to educate people about cannabis, about how it can help them, about how it can't help them, and then about educate them about your product and your service. But I do have to say that when I was first getting on Instagram, I didn't think that I was going to really have any content to contribute because I'm a writer. I said to myself, nobody wants to see a picture of me sitting at my computer typing away. But even I, a writer, quickly discovered the power of images. So that is something that I is part of my own goal to promote my business and tell people what it is that I do so they understand where the words fit in.
Well, everybody, you are listening to LA Miracle Cure, and in the spotlight for this week, in season two, we have Julia Rubiner. Did I say it right?
Rubin with an R.
I love that. A true Angelino speaking about her business as a herbal verbalist. We'll be right back after these messages.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
And we're back, and we're so excited to have Julia here with us. She is the herbal verbalist. And we were talking in our first segment a little bit about being a true Angelino, and about taglines and less is more, and how to craft words or to write copy so that it highlights the positive and kind of propagates or puts away the negative. Spin is what we call it. That's what she told us. So we learned a lot, Julia, and we really appreciate you. I want to go into a little bit more serious facet before we find out what you did before coming to a career in cannabis. But when I was at this committee advisory meeting for cannabis in Los Angeles, you know, it was, first there were about 1,000 people there. It was televised on closed circuit, some community station. But what I noticed, especially with the Weed for Warriors and with the AIDS patients and with the people who had children that have seizures, that when they testified, they were only allowed 2 minutes. A couple of people really made me cry just to hear about how they had PTSD and how they had all these psychotic memories and visions and just an altering of who they were because of war. Mm-hmm. And how mm-hmm. they had found cannabis haphazardly, but how it really helped manifest a different consciousness so that they could go on and not be harmful in the home to their families. I mean,
right.
It was amazing to hear how, even though we know cannabis does have a psychotropic, the cannabinoids, there's over 70 that really align with our own brains and create this marriage because it's a natural product that can really help some people. It was very interesting to see when they walked away how people would say, well, now that was very emotional. As if emotion or saying what you really felt from the heart should be discounted because it wasn't scientific. Could you speak to me and make me understand why do people separate the human emotion from their own experience, from the what would be the scientific reasons for using? Tell me that.
Yeah, first of all, I think there's certainly room for both, but speaking from the heart is a beautiful thing. And I think that that is really ultimately what does persuade people. It's not numbers on a page, it's somebody's personal story. And I know I've been very moved by the stories that I've heard, especially from veterans. I'm convinced that it's veterans that are going to affect the end of federal prohibition. Mark my words, because they suffer from certain things that are really dampened by cannabis. I knew a retired Marine Corps captain. I was talking to him, and he was in Afghanistan, and he has PTSD. He has sleep issues. He told me that he has this wariness, this constant vigilance that somebody's coming up behind him. And he says that cannabis helps with all of this. It helps with his sleep. It helps with this concern that there's always something about to happen. And how can you not be moved by a thing like that? But I think that getting down to the heart of the matter is really what's going to make change. And I think it's what has made change. It's not about culture and, LA has this history of cannabis culture and no, it's about people who are suffering. That's what's really moved things along in Los Angeles. We also have a big wellness culture here. And that's becoming a bigger deal everywhere. So people sort of look at it in that sense. I think that's another reason it's become such a big thing in California. But I think to respond more directly to your question, I really think that people have a hard time sharing their emotions, and nobody has a hard time sharing their facts and figures. So I think that the emphasis should be on people speaking from the heart and talking about their experiences.
Now, what my takeaway from that, when I really aligned, because trust me, I am not doing this what I witnessed. I'm not doing it justice by what I've said. But when I heard their personal stories, over 100 people who had a chance to give a 2-minute experience of why and how and how cannabis has helped them in various respects, it was mind-boggling. I think we also have become so distant from emotion. I'm going through mine privately. You go through yours privately, so that when we are faced with it openly, then maybe there's a inability to handle someone else's emotion.
Yeah.
You know, so there's
right.
There's a pushback there with lawmakers and with people who, well, that was emotional, so we want to move on, you know, because we don't want to break down and empathize or sympathize because that could alter how we really see this thing in the long run. However, at the same time, tell me a little bit about, did you think, I mean, after you went to college and you got married, you came out here. I mean, did you think that you would be in the cannabis industry?
Never. I didn't think anybody would be. I wrote recently that when I was a kid in high school, there was always that other kid who said, oh yeah, someday marijuana is going to be legal and it's going to be taxed, it's going to be regulated, it's going to be taxed, and these big companies, these big cigarette companies are going to come in and you're going to be able to buy a box of joints in out of a vending machine. And I always thought, well, that's just preposterous. And now these things are happening. These yes. big tobacco companies, liquor companies, and pharmaceutical companies are all making their moves. It doesn't even matter that it's not federally legal yet. They're all getting into position because they see that coming. And I can't believe I'm seeing it in my lifetime. It really, I think it's really incredible.
I mean, Julia, I love what you said about there were the smokers, there were the tokers, there were the yes. athletes, and there were the cheerleaders, and then there were the brainiacs, or rather the nerds. And that's what was at the campus.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course.
Yes. And you dare be the girl over with the tokers.
Oh, my gosh. I tell you. But, you know, the thing is, some of my best friends were tokers that you never know were tokers. Mm. It really hasn't changed that much. When you start talking to people and they open up to you and you're like, oh, huh. I never knew that you smoked or that you used cannabis.
Yes. Interesting. So what did you do prior to this? If you can tell us a little bit about, as we dig deeper into the life of Julia.
The life of Julia. Well, let's see. So when I've been a journalist, I have been an editor of reference publications. And I was then a publicity editor. And that's what I did when I came to Los Angeles. So I first worked at Geffen Records, and then I worked at DreamWorks Records. And I had a wonderful mentor who really taught me everything I know. She's the one who said, drill down, get the story, and everything flows from that.
Wow.
And boy, was she right.
So yeah, let me ask you this. So as a journalist, because, you know, we're in the age of everybody has an opinion. And,
right.
you know, that opinion is non-based. It's non-sourced. You know, I could write a blog if I wanted to. And I've gone to plenty of school, but never anything for journalism. So I don't have the ethics code. I don't know what I should be saying and what I shouldn't, what isn't right, what I could go to jail for. Tell me, in Freedom of the Press, just give us 2 minutes on what is real journalism and how should we see a source and what is this fake news business? Can you help us with that?
Oh, yeah, the fake news business. Well, I'm old school. I mean, I get up every morning and I read the New York Times and I read the Washington Post. If it's in the New York Times and the Washington Post, I believe it because I think they have the highest journalistic ethics. Same can be said for the LA Times, for that matter. These are the sources that I look at. And I think that it's a matter of what is the evidence and where is the evidence from? And everyone has to make their own decision. But you need to consider the source. It's exactly what you said. It's about the sources. You have to look at that source and read between the lines sometimes about what is this person's agenda. But fake news, I think, has become sort of a catch-all for news that you don't agree with or you don't like. If you don't agree with it, you don't like it, no matter how good the sourcing is, no matter how good the quotes from the people who are knowledgeable about the subject are, you say, oh, well, that's fake news.
Discredit it and discount everything about it. And I think we have, you know, the current administration who are our leaders to really count for that. And so now, you know, we have a situation where people are being driven by what is not even real news or what is not even a real source. I see people that really educate themselves from Facebook. It's horrible.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is.
And
I try not to do that.
And it's even more horrible to know that Facebook knows and then has used it inappropriately against the American people.
Right,
I think
right.
that is the biggest travesty and the biggest form of treason that could possibly...
I agree with you. I fully agree with you. There needs to be a mechanism in place to prevent this from happening. And I think that, again, it falls on the individual person, but there are sites like Snopes.com. I don't know if you've ever been there, Snopes.com.
Yes.
They do incredible fact checking. They find out about every story. And there are other organizations now as well, that their whole mandate, their entire mission is just fact checking, because we are now in this era where your opinion can be considered news. But it drives me nuts.
Right. And then also, you know, just to end this particular segment about it, but we just appreciate you being a journalist to give us this information and be able to discuss this and allow our people to hear it. But I think also what is a big problem is understanding that there are organizations, like perfect example, there are organizations that have taken over identities, like for different organizations that are against I don't even know
right.
how to really say this. Like, okay, so we're for Black people who are looking for organizations to finance and fund to advance the agenda for African Americans. There are KKK organizations, believe it or not, that are purchasing and being and looking the same, that are taking their money, and they don't even know.
Yeah,
that's what I'm
know.
Saying.
And it's a tragedy.
And that's happening on Facebook. It's really sickening.
It happens in cannabis, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Like one of the leading groups that is trying to promote illegality for all cannabis is called something like Smart Approaches to Marijuana, which on the surface sounds fantastic. But then you understand that their smart approach to marijuana is no access to marijuana for anyone ever.
Yes. See? And this is what I think got perfected in our political arena. Because, you know, we would go back and we would see these horrible commercials that would arise without anything good said. And then it would say, well, so-and-so did this, 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 and this, and isn't he awful? But now you can vote for so-and-so. And so we're in this great switch, the great debate and the great switch, and everybody has an opportunity to say something. But going back to the power of cannabis and the way it's written. So what do you say when it's time to have the talk, let's say with your kid, about cannabis and what is this and what is marijuana, what's the difference? What would you say to that? What are the correct words to talk to your kids about when you want to caution them against this?
Yeah, I'm not a believer that cannabis and alcohol can be equated across the board, because obviously that's not true. Cannabis has a lot of beneficial applications that alcohol just doesn't. However, in this discussion, I would advise parents, and I have a four-year-old niece who one day could easily say to me, what is this? What is this thing on this bus that just pulled up next to us, Auntie Julia? And I would say, well, that's something for grown-ups. And I would be honest with them, and I would educate them as best I could, keeping in mind what their intellectual level is to understand it. But I would never lie and tell them something that they're going to find out soon enough is not true. But I think it is reasonable to say that's something for grownups. And then when kids get older, and I have a 15-year-old nephew, I think that they need to understand that, and I wish I had this information when I was his age. Your brain is still forming when you are 15, and your brain continues to form until you are 25.
Yes.
Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think any determined teenager who wants to try cannabis is going to wait till they're 25 years old or manage to make it out of college without ever having tried it. However, I think they need to know that. That is true. There is research on that. And it's not fake news. And so they need to be armed with that knowledge. But beyond that, until they're 21, it's just not an issue for them, just like alcohol.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, you brought up something very important, what you just said. And I think it's worth going into and delving into a little deeper. And that is, what is the real issue with cannabis? Well, the real issue is there hasn't been the ability to have testing. The correct testing that we allow a pharmaceutical product, let's say. With pharmaceuticals, it takes almost 10 years. People don't even know this. When you go out and you get whatever the doctor prescribes to you and you take it home and you take it, you don't know the journey that that pill has made or that brand like Prozac. It takes like 10 years for this particular find to be tested on animals. And then it moves into a human testing or a human trial. And then that is considered to be, it has to be a certain population or a certain demographic. And then it has to move on from there. So everything has side effects. Everything works, what works for me, maybe doesn't work on you. But there are certain recommendations that are coming out or going to have to come out of the woodwork for cannabis. Because if you're using it medicinally, you need to know, well, if I have it in edible form, it works best to combat my nausea. How much should I have? And how much should I have if I'm just going to use it for adult use? So in this particular meeting I went to, they talked about health claim advertising. And the Bureau of Cannabis Control of California has put together this law. And they don't want people to be able to say, well, you know, Julia, it took away with my arthritis. Or, you know, Julia, I don't throw up after I take my pills that I take for my cancer. I can sleep and I can eat and I'm not losing weight. What do you say as a herbalist about how do you approach this when you know there are medicinal privileges or potencies that, what would be a good word here? There are properties about cannabis that we know advance health. How do you say it without putting claims of advertising that would make it wrong for people?
You just have to be really conversant with what the law is, what you can say and what you cannot say. And there are ways of saying things without saying things, if you know what I mean. So the more familiar you are with the laws and about what you can say and what you can't say, the better off you're going to be in terms of your own promotion or working with a consultant like me. And it never hurts to have an attorney in your corner either. But your larger point about there just not being the research yet is really a tragedy, because we know that cannabis has been used for healthcare for thousands of years. It's just in America, you had these powerful interests who were against it. Fortunately, Congress is starting to put their little toes in there, their baby toes. And there are now bills that are going to allow for research. Even Jeff Sessions, who, of course, has been the great enemy, the attorney general, who has been a great enemy of the cannabis industry, recently spoke favorably about research in the cannabis area. So we can finally say definitively, this is what the positive effect is. But that's that, like you said, that's going to take years and years. And the fact that it couldn't even be researched, I liken it to the NRA, the National Rifle Association, has for a long time been able to prevent people from studying gun violence as a public health problem.
Wow.
Of course it's a public health problem, but there are laws in place because the NRA lobbied to get those laws in place that aren't even allowing studies on gun violence. So it's a similar dynamic. You have certain vested interests overlooking the will of the people, overcoming the will of the people, because the people are not as rich and organized as some of these lobbyists.
Absolutely.
But I do think with cannabis, and maybe even with gun violence, who knows? But with cannabis, things are starting to move forward in that area.
Yes, it is. And so are we, because guess what? We'll be right back. You're listening to LA Miracle Cure. And I'm here with Julia Rubiner, and she is the herbal verbalist. And I tell you, this is quite a conversation. We'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
And we're back, and we're having this riveting conversation with Julia. Julia, I really want to get back to this situation about, okay, so now I have a dispensary, or I have a product that I really think would benefit people with skin problems, or with dryness, or with psoriasis. And I think that this problem would be better suited if I had the herbal verbalist working out my pitch. Would
right.
that be something that you would handle, or would it be for the overall business?
Well, I could definitely help with that. One of the things I can do for people is, if particularly if they're pitching for investors, and there are a lot of people out there looking to invest, is put together their presentation to investors. A lot of people use a PowerPoint presentation for that. But yeah, to be able to wrap it up in a nice little box, to be able to put it in a form that is most accessible to people who can help you with your business. That is something I can help with. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you put the business plan in this PowerPoint, or do you just give them like a little synopsis of, you know, hi, I'm an ex-rock star, and I've got this brand, and I've got this. And tell us a little bit. Just don't give us the secret blend, but tell us.
Right. Well, what you need to do, and a lot of this is it comes down to marketing science, basically, is you have to do things like, who are your competitors and what are they doing and how are you different from them? And who are the people who you admire in the industry and you like what they're doing and you want to do it their way? There's a lot of sort of, you know, who's your audience? You need to get these brass tacks down, and you need to survey people and find out who your niche is. I had someone approach me recently and she said, well, I have a dispensary and most of my customers are, shall we say, bros, which I knew immediately what she meant by that. But she said, I really want to appeal to women. I really want to appeal to older people. I really want to appeal to patients. I also want to appeal to more sophisticated, that was a product owner who said that they wanted to appeal to a more sophisticated sort of base of retail to go into. So you need to get your facts straight. You really do need to do all that sort of grounding in what this what your organization, what your product, what your service can do. So you put that together in a package. You have, and your business plan is absolutely part of that, because investors, of course, want to see what those brass tacks are. So it's kind of like what you were talking about before. It's, you've got to have the data, you've got to have the hardcore info that makes sense, but you need to have the emotional appeal. You need to have the reason why people are going to want this thing. And it can't just be because it says so on paper. You really have to make an emotional appeal, and that's what my background is. My whole thing is, you need to get someone to connect emotionally with your brand. No matter what your brand is, you need to get somebody to be able to connect emotionally with that brand. Otherwise, you're never going to be able to persuade them to buy your product or
right.
It's buy your
more,
service.
It's more of a call and response. It's like, you know, you hear something on the radio and I say, now you call us right now. Just like I'm going to say, if you want to hear last season, if you're looking to hear last season and all the wonderful guests that we had on LA Miracle Cure, then you can go to America Out Loud and look at LA Miracle Cure. And there we have all of our podcasts so you can learn a little bit more about the laws, about how dispensaries will show up in your neighborhood, about the players in Los Angeles and around. Also, you can go to our own website, which is lamiraclecure.com, and check it out and leave your email and we'll get back to you if you have questions or if you are in a state and they don't have legal cannabis. Let's talk about that. I would like to know, do you do remote work as well? I mean, what if a person was in New Jersey or if they were in New York and they had a business, you could handle that as well, huh?
Absolutely.
What if it wasn't in cannabis? Would you work with them then?
Yes. And in fact, I'm relatively new. I started working with cannabis clients in 2016. So I'm relatively new to this field, as most of us are. Technically speaking, I could have been doing the work that I do in this field since it became legal for medicinal back in 1996. But it wasn't until 2016 where I thought it was sort of a critical mass thing, where I was hearing these personal stories from people and thinking, well, I can really do something here. I can really help people here.
Right.
But that said, before this, my areas of expertise were entertainment, culture, arts, and what are in marketing speak are kind of considered lifestyle products or lifestyle services. I did a lot of work in the action sports sector, which you would call board sports. So yes, I have certain areas that I am really conversant in that I can help people with. Other areas, I would immediately steer you to a colleague because I don't want to give anyone the impression that I can do something that I cannot.
Well, let me ask you this. So, you know, for me, you know, we're in the same age bracket. And for me, I used to really love a juicy magazine. I used to love to bring it home and get some snacks. And I mean, it was better than binging. Like now, I guess we binge on Netflix. But back then, it was get a stack of magazines and binge. And we would get our style, we would get our culture that we wanted to identify with, we would get our sex tips, I could go on and on, the makeup tips, they were all in the magazine. Do you think magazines and that kind of periodical writing has suffered and now it's more of a 30 word or paragraph worth of feeling and that's all we have time for? Or do you think it's the blog, what is really taken away from that magazine that we used to enjoy?
I think it's really, again, it's really a matter of personal preference and of finding what speaks to you and what presents the information to you in a way that you enjoy. I have no trouble reading a really long article about something if it's really good. Maybe I'll bite it off and, you know, read it in a couple of different sessions, but I have no problem with that. But at the same time, depending on the topic, there'll be other subjects where I'll be like, okay, this story is going on too long. I mean, one of the things I love about MJ Biz Daily, Marijuana Business Daily, it's an online trade journal. They also do have a paper version of it, is they just seem to have the right amount of copy to keep me interested and not feel like I'm going to spend the entire day reading this story. So I think they're still, what you're talking about is still out there. And don't get me wrong, I used to love to get my, you know, my Glamour magazine or my Vogue or whatever, in the bathtub. I mean, nothing better. And I think that stuff is still out there. It's a matter of you have to look a little harder for it because there is also a lot of crap. You just got to get past that crap.
Exactly. So now that you have lived in Los Angeles, right on ground zero, as in Hollywood, and you're well familiar with what's happening in this dynamic of cannabis and these young people who are leading out, who are truly the entrepreneurs, who are really the ones who are making this shift. What do you, and getting rich, let me stop right there and say, and getting rich. So when you stroll through places like Venice, or when you stroll through places like West Hollywood, you see the opulence and you see the disconnection from humanity. Where do you think we're going to go as a city, as a consciousness with cannabis into the future? How do you think this is going to play out?
Well, I think that it's going to get normalized. It's going to get redefined, and it's going to be something that people get used to and that they are willing to do a little bit of research about to find out what works best for them. I understand it's a very difficult process right now to find what works for you, what particular strain, what particular delivery method, et cetera. But I think people will start feeling more comfortable with it overall. And I'm a big believer in that the Los Angeles Social Justice Program, I think it's great that they are making moves to bring people into the industry who might not ordinarily have had the opportunity because they don't have the money, they don't have the access, they don't have the connections, whatever. But of course, these are communities of color who've been screwed royally by the drug war. And, you know, you still have people in California, a fully legal state, you still have a situation where Black people, Latino people are being prosecuted at a much higher rate than white people who get busted with pot. I mean, I don't even know how you can say busted at this point, but I guess it would be you have so much, or you have a joint in your car or something. I know that there are, I'm not 100% in all the laws, but people still are getting busted.
Yeah, you know, that just blows my mind. You're absolutely right. People are going to jail for marijuana. And not only are they going to jail for marijuana, but get this, there are people that are still in jail that are serving time for these sentences that should have been commuted. It's very interesting how...
And I think LA is actually behind on that one. We're behind San Francisco, absolutely. And I think we're behind some of the other major metropolises in California as well. But everything should just be expunged automatically. I agree.
Right. And expungement is another conversation I'll have you back on. I would love to have you back on as one of our panelists. I'm planning to have shows that bring different types of people that are working now in the industry to bring a little bit more color and show you the life that's going on, that's being, injected into the business of cannabis, because I think that is even more interesting than just the person who owns the dispensary, because now you have to have a healthcare plan. You have to have an HR department. You have to have, you know, this is for bud tenders, people that, you know, are the expert and smoke a little bit and, you know, work it out and tell people this is the best one. And maybe you'd rather have that. It's amazing.
Yeah, and then somebody could speak up and say, okay, well, you're not right about this law. This is what it's, that's what it is. That person would be good to have on with me, for sure.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So that's what we're going to start to do. Season two is going to be morphed into more of an education as this expands. And it's moving at such a fast rate that it's very difficult to pinpoint, you know, some of the stars in the business. And I tell you, anybody that writes copy for rock stars is a star in my book. Okay, you got a star in my book. And I just wanted you to just tell us a little bit about how can people contact you that have a business? And because I'm out there working with people all the time, and there are some of you out there that maybe you're not even in the cannabis industry, and you're interested in just rejuvenating. You know, people are not calling. You've got old customers, you know, like me. I've got 2,000 people in my email box every day. How do you turn that into dollars and cents? So in the last couple of minutes, tell us what you could do and how people could contact you for that.
Well, I would love it for people to contact me. So you can certainly reach me. My email is julia@theherbalverbalist.com. And in fact, you can go to my website, which is also theherbalverbalist.com. And I am under that same name on Twitter, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on Instagram. I try to be out there as much as I can. But I'm pretty accessible. I would love to talk to anybody who wants to talk to me about this stuff, because I'm a true believer, man. I really am. And most of the people who are interested in getting into cannabis are as well. Of course, there's a lot of money to be made. But most of the people that I have met, that's not really their primary motivation for getting into it. So regardless of your motivation, I would love to talk to you.
Absolutely. I really want to thank you, really, for first off being very candid and being so gregarious and being so educated just about journalism and about what we should keep our eye out for and what we should question when we're forming our opinions and how we should value people who really are working with a code of ethics opposed to people who are just making comments and statements and running around trying to upset us all and get us emotional about things that don't matter when the things that really matter are being neglected.
Well, well said, and I thank you for raising the topic. It's something that it's so important, and I'm delighted that we got into that.
Absolutely. So I just want to let you listeners know that you can go to, let me give you the Bureau of Cannabis Control for California. This is www.bcc.ca.gov. If you're interested in any more information, you know, as of the 30th of April, temporary licensing is up. So now it's time for you to do your due diligence and get your permanent licensing, and you need to get on track to find out more about that. I want to thank Julia Rubiner for coming on and being with us in our spotlight this week. And I want you to go to our website, LA Miracle Cure, and take a look.com. Email me, tell me what you want to hear about. And in the next few weeks, we're going to bring a more national information that's going to talk to you a little bit more about what's happening in a state where you are. We're going to expand from LA and talk a little bit about what's happening around the country, because cannabis is here to stay. And I want you to be informed. And I'd like this to be the show that you use to get your information. Everybody, you've been listening to LA Miracle Cure, and we are on America Out Loud.